Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Mark. It's a good opportunity to speak to so many people because for us, Melbourne Water sees this as a major challenge. The topic of my talk today was, what does this mean for Melbourne Water? So you've got the big picture. What does it mean for the authority, one of the authorities that's delivering it? Well, I guess it means what it's meant for Melbourne Water in recent weeks has meant a high amount of certainty to the organisation and the industry at a time when there's significant uncertainty in terms of climate change in the next couple of decades. It's meant a fair amount of excitement by people within Melbourne Water and the industry and the other authorities, because we now know what the challenge is and we know the challenge can be met, but it means marshalling resources and marshalling processes and marshalling consultation to make sure it does happen. And it also means a fair amount of deja vu for some of the people at Melbourne Water who have been here for 30 or 40 years. When the Premier made the announcement on the 19th of June, he said this set of projects was the biggest that's been delivered by a government since the Thompson was built back in the late 70s, early 80s. Well, in fact, it's bigger than that. And I think it's worth spending a few minutes looking at the historical perspective to get that context sorted out. This is a graph which shows total storage system volume, the shaded area, and the annual demand. And one thing to note in terms of where we've come from is that back in the 1960s, there was a period in these early years, particularly in 67, 68, there was a period where, in fact, the amount of water being consumed by Melbournians was twice as much as that in storage. So at any one time, we were withdrawing more from the bank than we were putting in. In 1968, for example, approximately 300 gigalitres was consumed when the storages were as low as 100 gigalitres. That's not the situation we're in now. In fact, last year we had about 50% more water than there was for the annual demand in storages. But it does actually indicate that why the 60s, 70s and 80s were a pretty frantic year for the border works and the dam builders. In 1971, we had Greenvale built, Greenvale Reservoir, which added 18 gigalitres. In 1973, we had Cardinia, which was 290 gigalitres. 81, Sugarloaf came online, and the increase in yield from Sugarloaf was about 100 gigalitres. In the last 10 years, that was what the average yield has been. And then, of course, in 1983, the project that gave every engineer in the border works and every construction engineer absolute exhilaration, the Thompson Reservoir was built, and that was 1,070 gigalitres and increased our yield by 165. So we saw in that period of 12 years storage capacity in Melbourne grow from 300 gigalitres to 1,800 gigalitres, and the yield, a drought period yield, increased by about 265 gigalitres. The Premier of the day said it drought-proofed Melbourne. And in some respects, there's an element of truth to that, because in the last 10 years we've been relying on Thompson to see us through, and we will be for the next few years. So what was the result of all that activity in the 70s and 80s? Well, it meant that by New Year's Day 1997, the reservoirs were almost full. Reservoirs were 95% at capacity. However, since 1997, over the last 10 years, the reservoirs have been falling by an average of 80 gigalitres per year. So the net reduction in storage has been 80 gigalitres a year. And in 2006, it dropped by 345 gigalitres in 1 year. So we're really looking at a period of remorseless reduction in storage over the last 10 years. And the reason for that, well, people say climate change. The climatologists are providing evidence that that's the fact, and we'll come back to that in a minute. But the fact is that in the last 10 years, the stream flow inflows, which were once 588 gigalitres, are now down to 387, a drop of 34%. So this is the graph many of you have seen before. The long-term average stream flow into the reservoirs was 588. That's the top broken line, And then we've now dropped down to 387. So these are the facts that explain the dramatic drop of storage levels over the period. And as a result, dramatic strategy responses have unfolded. And as Peter said before, in April 2006, just 15 months ago, our reservoirs were at 50% capacity. Stream flows into the reservoirs were at the long-term average, and there was no water restriction. We were above the stage one trigger level. So the strategic response in April, 15 months ago, which no one at the time seriously questioned, in fact, expert review was supportive, was that we could meet our 2015 water needs by water conservation and local water reuse. So only 15 months ago, that was what analysis was indicating. And augmentations of the sort we're talking about now were said not to be really needed until the 2015-2030 period. And so we were talking about Eastern Water Recycle Proposal, Dykes Falls, stormwater recycling, and water substitution in the Yarra. However, between publishing the draft strategy in April and the final strategy in October 2006, stream flow into storages was only 123 gigalitres compared to the long-term average of 435. So there's a drop of 72% below the long-term average in stream flows in that October, April to October. So by the time the final sustainable water strategy was published in October, we were of the view that you had to look at the last nine years, as the baseline planning. And as a result, we said that augmentation would be needed by about 2015, and Eastern Water Recycle Proposal, Dykes Falls, and at that stage, seawater desalination was brought into the mix of options that were going to be looked at and for which feasibility studies would be developed. But it was not needed until 2015. The question being asked at the time was that 34% drop in your planning base a reasonable assumption to make? And this is the graph for Perth. Every time I go to a CEO's conference, national conference, every CEO brings out their graphs on their particular capital city flows. But Perth have been saying this for the last 30 years, or in fact the last 10 years. But 30 years ago, there was a significant drop in stream flows into the Perth catchments. And the last 30 years, the thick black line is the long-term average. The thick red line for the last 30 years shows that inflows have been 50% below the long-term average. Now, remember, ours was 34. Perth is saying 50%. If you take the last 10 years, then the drop is 65% below the long-term average. And the Southeast Australian Climate Initiative, which is made up of major representatives both from science and from government, is now saying that the climate changes that occurred in Perth, the phenomenon which brought about the change in Perth, are now starting to exert a permanent influence on Melbourne's weather patterns. So I'm not saying that our drop will get to the level of 65%, but assuming a drop of 34% is not at all unreasonable. So that was the basis of the October strategy, which talked about desalination as being an essential augmentation option. And as if to reinforce the possibility of the seriousness of this situation, between October and May 2007, the stream flows dropped again, and we're now 79% below. And as everyone knows, in terms of stream flow, everyone knows by mid-June, our storage levels were at 28.4%. And one of the dominant factors of this is clearly the El Nino effect. And the El Nino, a couple of decades ago, was occurring every 7 to 10 years in terms of having an impact on yield of catchments. It now appears as if that could well be a 3 or 4 year cycle. So in view of the latest evidence of the sort I've just been talking about and much more, the government decided in its June next stage statement that it would take a risk-averse and a prudent approach in the planning assumptions. And so one of the scenarios, as Peter's already said, is let's look at the possibility of an 04, 05, 06 cycle recurring. And Peter's very well explained this particular slide. So the 10-year average was, and which is the middle blue wavy line, was what was said was needed, required an augmentation by 2015. The 3-year scenario, as Peter's already pointed out, is the scenario which is now underlying the decision for the next stage. And so the conclusion is that we do need augmentations prior to 2015, well before 2015, and we need augmentations to be diversified. Whilst we got 260 gigalitres back in the 80s by new dams, we need a new source of water that's not rain, that is rainfall independent. And so we're looking at the desalination plant, which provides 150 gigalitres, with a potential to grow to 200, and water from irrigation improvements another 75, and as Peter said, the potential for another 50 to 100 gigalitres from ETP. So that's the backline. I know there's been some discussion with contractors and people interested in getting involved in the delivery of these projects. I think the one piece of feedback that is useful for us is that it's good that the strategy is based on an analysis of this sort. We're not just plucking figures out of the air. We have got a serious, admittedly risk-averse, strategy that is based on these facts. And I remember just being reminded by Janine Kirk that 2 years ago I gave a talk in a similar forum, and I said that the let's take a risk, let's not take a risk, and let's use the last 10 years as the average. We're now saying let's not take a risk, let's look at the last 3 years as the cyclic approach. There are three topical issues I want to cover before finishing. The first one is the drought over? Well, the answer to that is fundamentally, unequivocally no. Remember, we're using 040506 as the planning base. Just trying to get the next slide. Yep. Yep. This is a slide which shows the inflows to the reservoirs. The blue line is the 2004 year, which 2004 was a pretty wet year in terms of the last 10 years. And the black line is showing the situation as of taking into account June inflows. So even though we've had a very extremely wet June, the rainfall stream inflows are still only on the 2004. Sorry, the red line is the 2004. We're still only just on the 2004 level. Storages today are 35% compared to 47% this time last year. So even though we've had that very wet June, we're still just on the 2004 stream inflows to the reservoirs, which is what we were hoping for. It's not more than what we were hoping for. And storage is a 35% compared to 47% this time last year, which was the driest year on record. The second issue I was going to touch on was the procurement process, but Peter's already talked about that quite well. Melbourne Water is involved with the Sugarloaf interconnector, and we are discussing with the industry the procurement approach to that, which will be an alliance approach, and DSE are responsible for desalination. And the third sort of topical question is why Wonthaggi for the desalination plant? Peter's already said that we really couldn't have the desalination plant on the western side of the bay. The storage and the flow of water in Melbourne is from the east to the west. If you bring more water in from the west, you have to go against that basic system direction. And so the most we could get from any desalination plant on the surf coast would be about 100 gigalitres. If we're looking at getting 150, we'd have to have a significant upgrade of the pipe network. So it has to be on the eastern side of Port Phillip Bay. The eastern side, there are three sites looked at finally. Port Phillip Bay near Carrum, Western Port Bay near Crib Point, and Wonthaggi. The most significant consideration, in fact, was environmental impact. There are Ramsar considerations, there are considerations about the diffusion, about the dispersion of brine solutions coming out of the seawater desalination plant, which really meant that Wonthaggi, of those three sites, Wonthaggi was by far the preferred site for environmental reasons. The issue came back then to one of cost, and admittedly there is a bigger initial capital cost in putting a pipe from Wonthaggi to Cardinia as opposed to, say, Crib Point to Cardinia. But in the long term, it comes down to operating costs, and there's very little difference in operating costs. If you assume that the operating cost is in the order of $130 million, and that's yet to be proven, but if you take that as a starting point, then $30 million is associated with transferring water from the plant to the reservoir, of which only 5% is to do with transferring the water horizontally from A to B. 95% of that energy cost is lifting it, and whether it be lifting it from Crib Point to Cardinia or Wonthaggi to Cardinia, it makes no difference. It's still the same lift. So, Mark, that's really the overall picture as far as what does it mean for Melbourne, what it means in a historical context. I think the point is, as the Premier said, this is the biggest announcement since Thomson, but it's an announcement about a fundamentally different mix of strategic responses where new reservoirs are just not appropriate and we must have diversity which is linked to new sources of water, not rainfall dependent, and also, I might add, also strongly linked with continuing the water conservation and demand management initiatives, because these graphs we were seeing before assume that we are going to continue to consume water at about 25% less than we were in the early 1990s. If that falls apart, then we need another 100 gigalitres of extra supply. Thank you.